Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hello, welcome to the Autism Detectives. This is Patricia Lemmer, the author of Outsmarting Autism. I'm thrilled today to have as my guest John Gilmore speaking to us, I think from Long Island, right, John?
That's right. Beautiful Long Beach.
Yep, John and I've known each other quite a while. How old is your son, John?
Luke is 24. So
24.
I guess we've probably known each other close to 20 years.
Right. We've known each other about 20 years. So Luke got you into this autism world, right?
Yes, he did. You want me to sort of start the story?
Sure.
Luke was born in 2000. And at that time, you know, I think like most people, I don't think I really knew anything about autism. I don't think I had even seen Rain Man at that point, which was mm-hmm. what was most people's exposure to it at that point. I certainly didn't have any friends or relatives who had autism or had autistic children, or it just wasn't in my
right
radar at all. And when he was 60 days old, he had 4 shots, and when he got the shot, his health immediately deteriorated, and so did his behavior. He developed asthma, he developed eczema, he stopped nursing, didn't want to be touched, believe it or not. You know, can you imagine an infant that doesn't really want to be held or touched? But that was Luke. And we thought that was pretty weird, but, you know, we had one child who didn't do that, which I think was made us aware that this is not, you know, what should be going on. But we didn't really connect the dots. And what we found is that every time he got a round of vaccines this first year of life, we saw further deterioration of health. And further deterioration.
So you didn't connect it to the vaccines immediately?
Not at all, no.
So this was 2000. People were still not making much of a connection.
No, they weren't. And then when he got his last round, when he was just about a year old, there was just such a marked change in him. His speech was delayed already, but he had a few words. He lost those, and then he just sort of developed, we weren't aware at the time, but classic autism symptoms, right? And we were just sort of getting, you know, what is wrong with our kid? And I distinctly remember about this time I was cleaning the basement of our house, and I had the radio on. And I had it on to the local New York City NPR station. And, that was 25 years ago. NPR was a very, very different media outlet at that point, when they would talk about sort of controversial things that didn't really jive with whatever the dominant view of the government happened to be at the time. And it's kind of interesting because the show I was listening to, I later found out the host of it, who was a very, very popular local radio host in New York, he himself had a child who regressed after getting the MMR.
Okay? Oh, wow.
No, my son never got the MMR. At that point, they did not give it to you before children, before they were 18 months old. And he was in such bad shape by the time he was 18. That's, we had stopped at that point.
Mm.
And, so anyway, I was listening to this radio show and they had some people on talking about autism and they were talking about the, common, symptoms. And, you know, and right
you went
now,
check,
those
check.
Bobby?
You went check that one.
That's exactly what I did. I'm sweeping away in the basement, stuff like that. And they said,
my God.
You know, stares at ceiling fans, you know, for prolonged periods of time. Check. Mm. Appears to be deaf. Check.
Yeah.
Has a very little sense of pain. Check. You know? Will stare out the window at moving tree branches for long periods of time. Check. You know, flips toys.
Did he have physical symptoms? You said he had eczema, he had asthma.
So clearly an autoimmune thing was going on.
Mm.
And, so that kind of sent my wife and I onto, that gave us a direction. We were already searching. And then, of course, we continued searching. Our pediatrician was completely clueless. And we figured out how clueless and actually deceptive she was. Before his last round of shots, we were getting suspicious that it could be the shots.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we decided to do is we would only let him have shots that were required at some point to go to school, and we wanted to spread them out, and she agreed to that, and she immediately did the exact opposite, right? She gave my son HIB, which was brand spanking new at that point.
Wow.
And not required to go to school anywhere, and
nope.
She also gave him Prevnar, which was brand spanking new at that time and not required to go to school any, and she gave him at 3-1 visit. So, you know,
without
that's just the way modern pediatrics seem to be done. And then we also learned afterwards that when my son got his first round of shots, when he was 60 days old, he did not get the birth hepatitis B, which I will get to in a minute. But when he got his first rounds of shots, he was on antibiotics.
Oy, that's a double whammy.
That was always an absolute verboten. You do not give a kid a vaccine if they have an active infection. And you certainly don't give it to a kid who's on an antibiotic. But, you know, apparently they got rid of that precaution already at that point.
I don't think they ever got rid of that precaution. They ignored that precaution.
Well, yeah, they simply don't. It just interferes with production, so they got rid of it. Now, the interesting thing about that he didn't get the hepatitis B, right? And we knew kids. Our older son got the hepatitis B. Our son didn't. The second one, and actually, my wife was suspicious of vaccines well before I was. You know, and she didn't want him to get the hepatitis B to begin with, right? And the doctor just said, well, we're not giving them right now anyway, so don't worry about that. It was okay. And I didn't really think about it any more than that.
So it's curious
that
this is your second son.
This is my second son, right?
Your first
and
son.
Also, go ahead.
Your first son was typical and not affected.
My son was typical. He got the full load of the shots at the time. However, he did get a Prevnar. Okay, I'm not a Prevnar, a DTaP. And had the classic DTaP reaction. He screamed his head off for 10 hours, right? And, of course, we consulted the pediatrician. We still believed pediatricians knew anything at that point. And he said, of course, don't worry about it. It's normal. It's nothing, right?
And so this is pretty atypical that it's your second son, not your first. How do you explain that?
Who knows? You know, I think that the genetic draw, I think one of the factors is, well, I'm not really sure, but let me get back to the hepatitis B.
Okay.
Jack, my older son, got it. Luke did not get it. Luke did not get it because that was the fallout from the Simpsonwood meeting the secret Simpsonwood meeting that they had in Georgia to talk about a secret study the CDC had done on mercury in vaccines, particularly that given at birth, which at that point was just hepatitis B. And the longer story is some parents of autistic kids in Jersey who sort of figured out what was going on, talked to their congressman who got some language put in a bill that required the FDA and the CDC to quantify the actual amount of mercury that were in the shots so people could calculate what the dosage is the kids were getting. Up to that point, it was only listed as a percentage of the volume of the shot, which you can't figure out what the dosage is from that.
Right.
And once they actually got the micrograms of mercury that were going into their kids, our kids, you know,
huge.
They basically had a killer effect. Shot because they knew that they were giving them vastly more mercury than they had any idea that they were.
Right.
And that was way in excess of any kind of standard they had for adults, for ingested mercury, you know, much less mercury injected into a newborn, right?
So you raise this question about what happened with Simpsonwood.
Yeah.
I wish we had the time to tell that story, but it's in a book, right?
Yeah, it's probably several at this point.
If our listeners don't know that story, where can they learn about it?
There is a book out there. One of the first books on this was by David Kirby,
right,
who since unfortunately has passed,
right,
far too young. And it's called Evidence of Harm. It kind of lays out the story that I'm just talking about. And anyway, one of the things that they decided to do is they said they're just not going to give hepatitis. What they found... once they decided they weren't going to quantify this, they hired a Belgian epidemiologist, I think from Glaxo, to come do an epidemiological study of neurological outcomes for children who got hepatitis B shots with mercury at birth and those who either didn't get it or got it later. And what he found out is basically that the kids who got the hepatitis B with mercury in it at birth had seven times as much autism.
Seven times. Say that louder.
Seven times. That should be on the front page of the New York Times.
Seven times.
Yeah. More than kids who didn't get the hepatitis B shot. Right.
Right.
And we got to remember, hepatitis B
is a sexually transmitted disease.
And unless a kid is basically sharing needles or, you know,
right,
being very, very promiscuous, there's absolutely no chance they're ever going to get hepatitis B.
So how did it get in there?
Pardon me?
How did it get in there? Why are we doing this to babies?
Well, why ultimately is because it's very profitable. That's the first and foremost, right? And they came up with hepatitis B in the late 80s, and the idea was that they would give it to adolescents before they became sexually active, hopefully to protect them, you know, when they became sexually active from getting hepatitis B. All right. Now, that is complete bull because hepatitis B doesn't last very long, right?
Right.
I believe that they give three or four over the course of childhood at this point. And in some states, I live in New York, and New York has just introduced a bill here to make a hepatitis B mandatory to go to college in New York. They didn't pass it.
No.
It's been introduced. And if they're doing it in New York, they're doing it everywhere. Because all these bills are ideas from the vaccine industry, and they try them everywhere. But they usually start in states like California and New York because we have incredibly large pharmaceutical industries here and incredibly corrupt legislatures where pharma can pretty much get what they want if they push hard enough.
So it's what you and a lot of other people figured out, and what David Kirby wrote about, was that it was the mercury in these vaccines that was causing so much harm. And I went to the hearings about mercury with the congressional hearings on those, and people say, well, mercury's out of vaccines, so we don't need to worry about vaccines anymore. Now, that's not true, right?
No, I think, you know, these vaccines are this toxic and biologically, you know, virulent soups, right? And we give them to kids at, you know, the most vulnerable stages of their development.
Right.
I think there's a whole variety of things in vaccines that we know cause injuries of various kinds, right? Mercury is one of them, all right? Another one, any kind of heavy metal, all right, is not good in human bodies, particularly baby bodies. They use aluminum. Once they got rid of the mercury in the shots, they hugely increased the quantity of aluminum in them, because basically both mercury and aluminum act as adjuvants, right? That's a substance that makes the immune system hyper-reactive, right? And
right.
It basically makes the vaccine sort of more powerful is the excuse that they use.
Because they
right?
can't use so much of the pathogen in the vaccine. So they raise the body's immune response with these toxic metals.
Right. So, right. you know, so any of the heavy metals are a problem, but, you know, there's... I think, you know, I think with the pertussis is probably the most obvious example. It's just simply, it gives the kid, pertussis. And that ends up with...
Which is whooping cough.
It's a whooping cough, right? And
right.
One of the known consequences of that is they develop an infection in the brain. An encephalopathy, and that ends up doing brain damage. And at the end of the day, autism is a label that's put on a wide variety of brain damage caused by a wide variety of origins. Right.
Right.
Measles, they knew measles could cause autism back in the 60s and 70s. Okay, it wasn't controversial.
Mm-mm.
Right. And the vaccine industry right now is saying we've got to give people measles vaccines because we know measles can cause autism. Right.
Right.
They say it all the time.
So what kind of things did you do to help Luke? Early on.
Okay. Fortunately, there were a couple of doctors at the time, in New York who, their eyes had been opened, and they were starting to treat these sort of biological medical problems our kids had, right? And so we found one of these doctors. And he, before he started focusing just on autism, he had been an allergist, right? And I have really bad allergies, right? And there's lots of evidence out there that autism rates in families with autism, with allergies and other autoimmune conditions have a much higher autism rate.
Right. Right.
So there's this clear autoimmune.
So did he treat your allergies and Luke's allergies?
No, but what he did with Luke is he just did an ordinary array of, allergy tests. Just to say, you know, we want to improve his health overall and then sort of focus on what we can to try and alleviate the symptoms and the underlying mechanisms that are leading to the symptoms that's related to his autism.
Mm-hmm.
And he simply found out. He says, well, you know, your kid is really allergic to milk and wheat and soy. So
the typical allergens.
Yeah, which is basically gluten and casein, right?
Right.
And so we did, and my kid, you know, his torso, for most of the first year of his life, most of the time, look, we had poured boiling water on him.
Oh, my God.
And
bright red.
Just swollen, red, inflamed, angry. Mm. It looked like burns, you know?
Oh, wow.
And, So he had really bad asthma, and we were putting him on a ventilator, giving him a Buterol, you know, four times a day.
As a little,
as a two-year-old. I had real issues with that because, you know, I've always had allergies, but then when I moved in my late 20s from New York to California, my allergies went from just being like hay fever, and when I moved to New York, I developed really bad asthma, right?
Oh, my God.
Which I had never had asthma before. Anyway, long story short, we treated my asthma with Chinese medicine, and we went away. And what happened with Luke is once we got the soy, the milk, and the wheat out of his diet, the asthma went away, and so did the eczema within about a month.
Amazing.
And they never came back.
John, we have to take a break.
Got it.
So when we come back, I'd love to forge ahead on how your experiences pushed you into autism action. Because you've been very active. You're listening to the Autism Detective. This is Patricia Lemmer. My guest today, John Gilmore, is the Executive Director of the Autism Action Network, and he's going to tell us all about it when we come back. Stay tuned.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Lemmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Constant Contact and your small business make a perfect fit for marketing. They give you what you need to succeed. Fast and easy email marketing at your fingertips. Visit the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on Constant Contact to start your marketing.
Stuff, stuff, stuff. Where can I contain all of my stuff? How about this? The Container Store, the original storage and organization store. And I found their link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. They have containers for everything, including the kitchen, the bathroom, trash and recycling, traveling, spring cleaning, and dorm rooms. Just about everything you can think of to contain your stuff. The Container Store, right on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Autism Detective. My guest today, John Gilmore, the Executive Director of the Autism Action Network, has been very active for almost 20 years. John, you founded this organization in 2005, and it's really a health freedom organization. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. A little history on this. There was the movement at that point was very small, And there was a small group of very active people in New York who had started getting active where they happened to be. And as time went on, we all got to know each other and started collaborating and so on. And then an idea was made to, we should have like a formal coalition for political action. And the name we came up with was very long. It was Advocates for Children Self-Affected by Mercury Poisoning, ACM.
So that's what really triggered it, was the mercury poisoning in the vaccines.
Well, that's what we focused on initially. And there was an effort across the United States, particularly at the state level, because, one, it's a lot easier to get stuff done at the state level than it is in Washington, D.C. And, two, most of the rules affecting vaccines and school schedules and things like that are done by the states.
Right.
So this effort started the country to change state laws. Mm. And I was in New York, so I figured, why not try it here? I mean, I was a political science major as an undergraduate. I went to the Graduate Public Policy School at UC Berkeley because I was specifically interested in you know, a career. And initially, I was really interested in doing environmental regulation.
Mm.
And so, which is actually a pretty good fit with, you know, mercury in products given to small children, right? And so I started working on trying to get a ban on mercury in children's shots, in pregnant women's shots here in New York. And my father-in-law had been, he's a commercial fisherman, and he's been a little bit active in politics because fishing tends to be heavily regulated. And so he knew our local assembly member. So I went to our local assembly member, who turned out to be basically, he had a severely disabled son. I don't think his son was ever diagnosed with autism, but he did have severe disabilities. He was the disability guy in Albany in the assembly. And I came to him with a bill, and I just got really lucky, at least initially, because he was completely into it, right?
Wonderful.
And then we had to get a Senate sponsor. You know, most states you got to have a sponsor for your bill in your lower house, and then you have to have another sponsor for your bill in the upper house. It's usually the Senate, the Assembly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I'm going to call our state senator. And I wasn't really all that aware of state politics at the time. But it turned out that our own state senator, the district that I lived in, was the leader of the majority in the state Senate. And I didn't know this until later, but he had an adult son with autism himself and was very sensitive to these issues and aware of these issues. And
so the first bill was about getting mercury out of vaccines.
The first bill was to get mercury out of vaccines. It took us 2 years, but eventually we got a bill passed that made it illegal to give a shot containing mercury to a child under three or a pregnant woman.
And then you really, really branched out, and you're looking at all other kinds of advocacy and legislation related to autism and civil rights and insurance reform and all kinds of other stuff.
Right, because, like, I mean, just as we were going through, you know, with my son, it's just like I just couldn't believe the stuff we were running into, right? We were taking him to a neurologist at that point. The neurologist wanted to do an MRI of his brain to make sure he didn't have a brain tumor. And she also wanted to do an EKG to make sure he wasn't having seizures, right? But my insurance at the time refused to pay for it and said, we don't do that stuff for people with autism.
Amazing.
I met other parents, you know, all the work was done by parents, right?
Yep.
So the Autism Action Network at its core now and always has been really a parents organization, right?
And you're a nonprofit. You're a 501c3.
We're a 501c4 because a 501c4 has no limitations on what I can do politically.
Oh, right.
And we endorse candidates. We don't do a lot of it. We're doing more as time goes on. But there's no limit on what you can spend on lobbying, and cause that's always been our focus, right? So
right.
There's limits with a 501c3, so we didn't go that way.
Okay.
But we've always been a parents organization, and the things that we have focused on as the issues in the autism world have changed, as the political environment has changed, those issues that we really focus on have changed over time as well. But, once we got the Mercury thing taken care of, what we really tried to focus on was trying to get our kids medical care, right? And a lot of that had to do with insurance, getting insurance to cover stuff they needed. This wasn't just in New York. This is all across the country. So that period from 2005 to about 2010, we really kind of worked very intently on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were other issues. One of the things right now, like starting back in 2015 when they introduced the bill in California, S-277, to eliminate the religious exemption from vaccine mandates to attend school.
Mm.
That was basically from 2015 through fairly recently, a huge portion of our effort has been focused on just trying to protect our rights as parents, and actually as individuals as well, to decide what goes into our kids' bodies or our own body, right?
So people don't understand that, everybody thinks, well, you have to be vaxxed to go to school, but they don't understand that there are waivers and exemptions that if you believe and you have a religious belief or a philosophical belief or a medical emergency that prohibits you from being vaccinated, that you can still go to school. And that's what you're protecting, right?
That's what we were, and that was just all over the, not all over the country. There was a big flash of bills around 2015, mostly in blue states, but in some red states as well. The red state ones got shot down very, very quickly. And then for whatever reason, the eliminating parents' choice from vaccines is something the Democrats glommed onto as an issue that they really wanted to spend a lot of their effort on.
We need to take another break. And when we come back, you can tell us more about that, how that
sure.
became a big political issue that you became very active about, the exemptions. You're listening to the Autism Detectives. My guest, John Gilmore, is telling us about his activism to protect parents' rights about what is put into their kids' bodies. We'll be right back.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Shh! Over here. Here's a secret for a virus-free computer. ESET. They've been a pioneer in the antivirus industry for over 25 years. 25 years of innovative, top-rated antivirus protection. ESET's award-winning security solutions provide a safe online experience for over 100 million home and business computer owners. They are so affordable, fast, and simple to use. So be gone, you blue screen of death. ESET's on my computer. If it's not on yours, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on ESET now.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back. John's telling us about the amazing work that the Autism Action Network has done. John, before we finish this thought, can you just tell people you have a website, right?
Yeah.
Autism Action Network, is it .org?
That's right.
And how can they email you?
You can sign up to get on our mailing list and get information about some of the legislation we're working on and get involved. Because basically that's a key thing, right? You know, we do not have an army of paid professional lobbyists out there. I mean, we are all about motivating people who care about these issues to get engaged politically. We tell you what you need to do, what you need to know, who you need to talk to, how you can talk to them.
It's so important.
So
your work is just so, so important. And you're in every, are you in every state, in most states?
We're not in most states. We have members in all states. There's 50 states. It requires a small army, but we've got colleagues in other states.
Good.
Not necessarily the Autism Action Network.
But we focus on
federal issues as well, which affects every state. Whether we're going to get into a particular bill, say in Georgia or Texas, we just haven't got the resources to do that.
When I interrupted you, though, you were telling us that the Democrats got all excited about some of these issues.
Yeah, it was really weird because really up until Obama, there was nothing really partisan about our issues. We had Republican friends, we had Democratic friends, we had Republican enemies, we had Democratic enemies. There didn't really seem to be a real partisan split on it. And actually, that was kind of a problem for us, because basically in politics these days, unless you could put a partisan spin on things, a lot of politicians just don't want to pay attention to it, right?
Right.
And for good and bad, it got partisan under Obama. And what happened under Obama, to make it real simple, Obama wanted to pass Obamacare. And he cut a deal with pharma. And he told pharma, you back me on Obamacare, and I'll just basically let you guys do what you want. And it's been that way ever since. And it completely restructured the alliance there. And all of a sudden, what used to be kind of a 50-50 split with pharma money to both parties, the majority of it then started going just to the Democrats. And it's remained that way ever since. And over going through COVID and all the craziness there, you know, I don't think I have to explain to anybody who's been paying attention how vaccines have become completely partisan at this point.
Right. And masking and mandates and, you know, everything that goes with vaccines.
School closures, the whole thing, yeah. There's this real, unfortunately, you know, I just think this is facts, that there is a lot more support for really heavy-handed government intervention in society and in people's lives, particularly if they can put a public health spin on it that is far more popular with Democrats these days than Republicans. You know, I mean,
all you got to take a
look at what happened in Florida under DeSantis and what happened in New York under Cuomo or perhaps California under Newsom. New York City schools were shut down for 2 years. 2 years.
And teachers were fired for not complying.
Not just teachers in New York City. In New York City, we had a law that you had to be vaccinated to work, period.
Mm.
If you did not get the COVID shot, you were not allowed to work. And we had a system of vaccine passports. If you wanted to go into any public place, you had to show your proof that you've been vaccinated. That was true for restaurants, libraries, theaters, public buildings. About the only place you could get into might be a grocery store. It was absolutely insane, crazy here. And we fought that like crazy here.
I was going to say, you were very active during that, and you...
Oh, yeah.
You got people's rights reinstated.
Well, I mean, basically, everything they were doing in New York and many other states was simply just, they said, oh, you know, constitutional rights, forget it. Out the window, right?
Right.
And, you know, shutting down businesses, shutting down schools, you know, enforcing mandates. There was like, they don't have the legal authority to do that, but they went ahead and did it anyway, right? Mm. And as we, well, as many people knew at the time, and I think most people are paying attention and realize now, they were spectacularly wrong about everything.
Right.
They got everything wrong, okay? Masks do not work. The head of the NIH admitted that when they came out with, you got to keep the 6 feet physical distance between people, they completely pulled that out of their hats. They had no justification for that at all.
Right.
They covered up all the side effects. You know, they did not tell us that 80% of the women who got the Pfizer shot during the trials who were pregnant miscarried. They didn't tell anybody.
How many?
80%. 80% of the women in the Pfizer trial who got the shot lost their babies. And they went out and told every mother, expectant mother in America that they had to get it.
Oh my God.
I mean, this is like war crime level stuff.
It is.
In the Pfizer test that the limited Pfizer test that they did, there was 20% more deaths in the group of people who got the vaccine that didn't. You can't get any more clear evidence that the shot should not be given to anybody. They lied about all of that.
Tell us about your latest bill that you fought, this medical procedures on kids.
Well, you know, what's interesting is like between 15 and let's say COVID, I think the real focus of the vaccine industry was to just to come in with as many mandates as possible, right?
Right.
I think they really blew it with COVID. People do not want mandates anymore. So what the vaccine industry is trying to do is they are trying to take the parent out of the picture. There are all kinds of bills in New York, California, blue states, probably some of the red states as well, where they're trying to allow children to be allowed to make medical decisions without the parent having any knowledge or consent about it at all.
What age children?
In New York, we have a bill, right? I think I'm fairly confident we've killed it for this year, right? What the bill would do, this is hard to believe, the bill would allow any medical procedure to be done to a child of any age without parental knowledge or consent, and the child would automatically qualify for Medicaid to pay for whatever services the child, quote-unquote, consented to, right?
This like is a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old.
A 2-year-old. There is no lower limit. The state in New York saying, you as parents have no right to your children. The children belong to us, the state. We're going to do them what we want to do. You don't even have a right to know about it. That's how far gone
John,
you are.
It's time for our last break. I'm
okay.
My jaw's hanging on the floor. We need to take the break so I can catch my breath. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this, and then I want to hear about Luke and what's going on with Luke today.
Okay.
You're listening to The Autism Detective. My guest, John Gilmore, is blowing us away with what the government is trying to do and get rid of our health freedom. And we will be right back. Stay tuned.
You know, when my grandson takes a long car trip, he listens to audiobooks. A long drive seems faster, and sometimes he doesn't want to get out of the car because the book isn't finished. With over 100,000 books, Audible.com is one of the best places to get audiobooks. You can listen to a bestseller anytime, anywhere. Audible.com, your destination for the widest selection of audiobooks. Join millions of listeners. Just go to the Audible.com on HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
Radio Your Way. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to this amazing segment from John Gilmore, the Executive Director of the Autism Action Network in New York, but it's a national advocacy organization made up of parents who are pissed off about what the government is mandating to do to their children. John, I had no idea it was this big. We want our listeners to get involved with you. How can they?
Like I was saying before, go to www.autismactionnetwork.org and sign up. Okay, we send out information several times a week, focusing primarily on legislation that affects primarily families affected by autism, and particularly issues that relate to vaccine rights, because our core issue has always been that our children were injured by vaccines, which is why they have autism. And the thing is you got it. You know, I mean, you could just sit back and like send a check and make a phone call once in a while, or not even doing that. But our real goal is to get people really involved. Okay, to know who their legislators are, where they are on the issues, and to engage with them regularly on the issues. Right.
And that means rallies at the State House.
Rallies at the State House. We have educational events. We have marches. It just whatever needs to be done to, you know, get the changes that we need to make happen is what we do.
It's quite amazing what you've made happen, and this latest bill about medical procedures on kids is just appalling.
Right.
And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go on. What's next?
Well, you know, one thing this relates to is that, you know, one of the things that's going on is that we're not talking nearly enough about, but apparently 30% to a third of all the kids in the United States undergoing hormone treatment or surgery to alter their sexual organs for various reasons.
This gender dysphoria nonsense.
Right. A third of them are on the spectrum.
Right.
And it seems pretty clear to me that what we have here is yet another example of an extremely avaricious and predatory medical industry preying on our kids because they're vulnerable. Right.
Wow.
And that's yet another reason why they want to take parents out of the picture, right? They want to be able to get the kids on hormone blockers and on probably psychiatric drugs and a whole range of things.
And it's
but
about
the only way
money,
they can do that
it?
Is to get the parent out of the picture, which is why you're seeing so many anti-parent bills out there and why you're seeing so much effort going into allowing children to make their own medical decisions. That's a big issue, big and growing issue right now.
Yeah. So, John, you mentioned the presidential candidates and that this was a partisan issue now.
Right.
You know, we like RFK Jr., who has always been very open about his understanding of the science behind vaccines.
Right.
And he has had horrible press, but if people bother to listen to him and what is coming out of his mouth instead of writing him off as a whack job, he is really for our kids, isn't he, with children's health defense.
Well, when it comes to the presidential race, there's no question. If you are concerned about autism, if you are concerned about the explosion in chronic illness that has hit the United States in the last 30, 40 years or so, autism, ADHD, rheumatoid arthritis, all these autoimmune issues that have gone exploded, juvenile diabetes, all of that. If you're concerned about that, if you're concerned about your own rights to decide what goes into your body as far as vaccines, what goes into your parents, I mean your children's bodies, there's only one choice. You have to vote for Kennedy. You know,
what about people who say, well, he can't win? He's going to take votes away from other candidates, and we're going to get the wrong president.
Well, I think he can win, right?
I do, too.
He's consistently polling in the high teens, and he's still got 6 months to go. And I think that if he gets in a debate with the other two major candidates, he is going to destroy them. Because, let's talk about, I mean, there's a lot of issues out there. There's huge, important issues that we at the Autism Action Network just do not get involved in, right? Because they're outside the scope of our main concern.
Right.
We don't do anything about immigration. We don't do anything about pro-choice or pro-life issues, right? Other people can do that. I'm talking in the context of the issues that we've been talking about today. And if that's what you're really concerned about, you have to vote for Kennedy, right?
Let's finish with Luke. Bring us up to date with Luke. Luke is a non-verb. He's non-speaking, right?
Right. Well, he is non-speaking. He has maybe about 10 words. About 2 years ago now, we started working with him using a technique called Spell to Communicate.
And our listeners have heard several parents talk about spelling to communicate, and they've heard DM, they've heard Judy Chinitz, we've had a couple of guests, and so Luke is a speller now?
He is spelling now, okay. I gotta admit, I'm ashamed to say it, but, I was pretty certain that Luke was intellectually disabled, as well as having autism, and he isn't, okay?
He
has a perfectly functioning mind in there that can read and write and understand and do math calculations in his head.
Isn't that incredible?
He is so neurologically damaged that it was almost impossible for him to let us know what was in there, right? And by using Spell to Communicate, it's made it clear that he is an intelligent human being in there.
Amazing. What are you looking at down the road, do you think?
When I look down the road, who knows what's going to happen?
Right.
I mean, he's working with Judy Chinitz. I mean, hard for me to say this, but it's like he is taking GED prep courses. I mean, when he was in high school, all he got was like this idiotic ABA. Touch your nose, you know.
Right.
I'm not a proponent. I mean, I know ABA done some ways can be helpful, very helpful.
Not a fan.
A lot of it is just like unbelievably boring, repetitive, discrete
trials.
And
it's abusive. I will go as far as to say it's abusive.
I can't imagine how torturous that must have been for, an intelligent kid, any kid, to have to do that. So
Judy Chinitz is working with Luke, and I've done two interviews with Judy Chinitz, and I urge any listeners who haven't taken the time to listen to those interviews to do so. Her son Alex is quite a phenomenal story too.
Yes.
And I can't tell you, John, how much I appreciate your coming on and telling us about Luke. And as you say, who knows what comes next? We would never have guessed we would be here today in 2005.
Judy Chinitz is Luke's teacher, and she has saved his life.
Isn't that remarkable?
It is.
Well, I love seeing you once a year at a retreat that we both go to, and I wish you so much luck in everything that you're doing, and I support all your efforts, and Let's just keep on trucking to help these autism families.
We just don't give up. I'll see you in Claverack.
All right. Thanks, John. Thanks for coming on.
Get the roadmap you're looking for to help those with autism. Veteran counselor Patricia Limmer's book, Outsmarting Autism, gives you all the resources you need to develop a strong foundation for a healthy lifestyle at any age. It describes many new therapies for improving communication, socialization, and behavior by treating underlying biomedical causes. Learning to prioritize therapies saves you time and money. Get answers now. Buy her book at OutsmartingAutism.com. You'll be glad you did.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.